This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
And now that heart is beating fast, and that's the rhythm I can dance to. I'm mighty glad I've got a chance to, that one big heart that's beating fast. Tomorrow morning, let it rain. Tomorrow morning, let it pour. Tonight we're in the groove together. Ain't gonna worry about stormy weather. Gonna kick old trouble out the door. Beat out old trouble on drum. Beat out old trouble on drum. Beat out old trouble on the drum, and kick old trouble out the door. Beat me that rhythm on the drum. Beat me that rhythm on the drum. Beat me that rhythm on the drum, and kick old trouble out the door. Kick him 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 out the door.
Welcome to Radical Australian Community Radio 3CR, streaming live on 3CR. .org.au. This program will be podcast. And Joe is doing the panel operating. William is learning.
Ooh.
And Virginia Haywood is our guest. Good afternoon, Virginia.
Hello.
Hello. How's it feel being on the other side of the microphone?
Well, ironically, I was on the other side for quite a long time.
Mm.
Pam ran the gardening show.
Mm.
And then she retired and she...
Excuse
gifted
me.
Us to...
Excuse me, did you say the gardening show?
The gardening show.
Are you involved in the gardening show?
I very much am, yes.
Is that when you waste your Saturday? Is that on Saturday or
no,
Sunday?
No, Sunday morning.
Nobody Sunday morning?
We start at 7:30 in the morning.
What?
I don't think anybody else wants to take that slot. 7:30 to 9:15. And why it is such a peculiar stretch of time, I've never known.
Well, it's because people, you're atheists, you don't want to go to church. That's what it is.
Oh, definitely an atheist.
Yeah, so there you go. That's it. You had nothing to do, so you may as well come to 3CR.
I could stay in bed. I could be out gardening.
That's a bit radical, getting up in the morning and gardening in the beautiful sunshine. That's unbelievable. No, don't show
me. I have a very big garden,
yeah, don't
see.
Show me. I'm going to ask you questions. Garden. This is radio.
I do realise that.
Well,
I have been on for a while.
How long?
I think I started in the 2000s.
When did you think I started?
1970.
No, 1977.
Oh, really? Well, I think that's about when the garden show started. But,
yeah.
Of course, I moved to London in 81. So
all
I didn't
right. Let's go back to the beginning. First of all, you take talk back in the gardening show, don't you?
Yes, it's always talk back.
What's the most common question to ask?
Well, it used to be about lemon trees.
Right.
And whether to piss on them or not.
Oh, my God.
But
pedestrian.
Nowadays, our questions have become a lot more sophisticated. It's quite interesting. We've got a big podcast audience.
Right.
We get stuff in. We have somebody who rings in from Birmingham in England occasionally.
Right. Well, they're trying to grow pineapples or something in Birmingham.
Couldn't do that in Birmingham. Be too sophisticated for Birmingham.
Yeah.
And we do. And quite often we have questions that we can't actually answer. And we throw.
Yeah.
There's about 30 different people make up the gardening show.
30?
Yeah.
How do you fit 30 people in the studio?
Well, we never. We have a roster.
Yeah.
A very old-fashioned.
I thought, do you remember the old program here, Dykes on Mics?
Yep.
You know they've got the record for stacking a studio, I think 36 people.
Oh, how fabulous.
And I thought maybe the gardening show, you should try to beat the record. What do you reckon?
Dykes on Mics, I'd love it.
Well, you'd have to get...
But we won't.
Look, I'll tell you what.
Because
most of
the people who come on live in the country.
What?
So, you know, it's hard. So we roster, but every week it's a different makeup, which means every week different sorts of questions can get answered, which
is actually
a really good thing.
But are you a constant? Is there a constant? Somebody's
I'm
a constant?
I'm a constant in that I do the rostering.
You do the rostering.
So I decide the order.
All right.
But I'm on, I try and I've tried to come back to once a month.
Right.
I usually am on more than once a month. Right. But, and we've got five that host the show, right, and three every week who come onto the show.
Yeah. And do you all turn up for Radiothon?
No. You don't? I hate Radiothon. I don't come.
Why do you hate Radiothon?
I find it really difficult. I don't know why. I just find it a very stressful, difficult day. So unless I'm forced to, I don't come. Yeah. So others are more natural at it. I can't tell you why. I really
don't
know.
That's fair enough.
But
so,
I don't
so
like
what
it.
Year were you born?
Me? Yes. 1952.
52. Well, you need to respect your elders. Mm. I was born in 51.
Ah, there you go.
Okay. 52. Where were you born?
I'm a dragon and I'm a Taurus. A dragon and a bull. And I was born in East Melbourne.
East Melbourne,
mm-hmm.
Not at the old Freemasons.
Yeah,
the maternity unit there. Yeah,
I was.
You were. And your parents?
Well, my dad, there'll be quite a lot of listeners will probably remember my dad. My dad's name is Doug Haywood.
Yep.
And he broadcast the footy and the Australian Open.
Right.
On the ABC.
Right.
He originally started on 3OW, but then moved over to the ABC quite quickly.
Mm.
And he did that for 30 years, more, 40 years.
Well, it was the good old days because you didn't have individual contracts. People were actually employees of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation.
But he worked otherwise. He had a job and that was what he did at weekends.
Oh, so he had two jobs.
Mm.
So how many brothers and sisters did you have?
One brother.
One brother. And he needed to do two jobs to keep...
to keep us? No, we were low maintenance.
Right. And what was your mum's name?
Daphne.
Is she still with us?
No, unfortunately. She died in her 60s, which is much too young.
Right. And were they both born in Australia or were they born overseas?
No, both in Australia.
Right.
Both, I think. I know very little about my mother's family. I know quite a lot about my father's family.
Mm.
My great-grandmother was the first woman to run a sheep farm on her own along the Murray River.
What was her name? Ah, sorry.
I almost
Haywood.
Know. No, she wasn't. She wasn't a Haywood.
No.
I almost know.
Yeah.
But not quite.
Doesn't matter. It's all right. I can't remember. I never met my grandparents. They were all dead before I was born, so.
Well, this was my great-grandmother.
That's
so
right.
So needless to say, so, I didn't meet her.
No, no. So what was East Melbourne like for a young tacker in those days, you know, when you're just a little person under five or six?
Don't remember.
You don't remember?
Not really.
No.
I don't remember much. We lived in Surrey Hills back in those days.
Oh, not in Surrey Hills. Mm.
Yeah. And
you still,
my dad's family came from out of Seymour. And if you go to Seymour, there's Haywood Hill and Haywood Crescent. And
so
they're obviously a very early family.
Early family. Most likely they're involved in getting that Avenue of Honour for the World War One dead.
Probably.
Yeah.
My grandfather and his brother had a sheep station out past Puckapunyaw, and I spent a bit of time there as I grew up. I spent a lot of time there when I was little because my brother got meningitis very young and mum just basically moved into hospital.
Right.
I went and lived with my grandmother.
Did your brother recover?
He's a neurologist, I presume.
Oh,
that might be why he did neurology.
Neurology, I reckon.
I've always thought it's actually because he wanted to do computer science, but it wasn't really around then.
No.
I thought neurology was the closest thing to computing, but maybe it was because of his meningitis.
I'm sure it was because he would have spent a long time in hospital in those days.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you said, your mum basically moved into hospital. Yes. So he's done extraordinarily well, hasn't he? He's overcome a serious illness as a young child and he's...
As a baby,
yeah. Very, very, very good. So where did you go to primary school?
I went to PLC for the whole of my...
Presbyterian Ladies College.
Yes. Right.
No wonder your father was doing two jobs. He had to pay the school fees.
Absolutely. I've no idea why either. I never thought to ask them. It's such a peculiar thing to do.
Were they had any religious inclinations?
Mum would probably have called herself a Christian. Dad went to boarding school because when he was at school, it finished at year nine in Seymour. So if you went on, you had to go down to Melbourne.
Right.
And so those last 3 years he spent in boarding school at Scotch College, and he said that he associated religion with very bad food because they always had shocking food for lunch on Sundays.
Well, yeah, because the other boarders would have gone home and the country boarders would have been left and the cook, they couldn't pay the cook. I can understand. Well, that's why he sent you to Presbyterian Ladies College, because if he's experienced at Scots College, he thought that's the only way for a young person to get an education.
I think he sent me there because it was the most academic of the girls' schools.
What do you mean? Did he think you're a little child genius?
No, I think he just wanted me to be able... he told me very young that if I wanted to, I could go to university. And our generation, a lot of the girls weren't allowed to.
No, that's right.
We were
right.
Expected to become secretary. I mean, Dad, I think, early picked that I
home
wouldn't
duties.
Have been a very good secretary.
Home duties. Shorthand, yeah. If you're secretary. Oh, I can imagine shorthand. Did you ever do shorthand?
No.
So where was primary school?
It started off in East Melbourne.
Right.
And then moved to Burwood.
You got anything you want to share about it?
Nope. I got into trouble a lot at school.
Why?
I was naughty.
Why? Attention? Or you thought the work wasn't hard enough?
I tended to dislike rules that didn't make sense. I still have the same problem.
You've got authority defiance syndrome. It's a psychiatric disorder now. It's a registered psychiatric disorder. Authority defiance syndrome.
I hope my family's not listening to
this. I hope they are, because that's the problem. You've got authority defiance syndrome and you had it in your DNA. Yeah, you had it in your DNA. I'm positive.
Yeah.
All right. Don't worry. They're just the technical stuff. They don't count. Without them, we wouldn't be here. But that's why they don't count. Right. So what happens when you look? I went to a public school, so I'm a bit confused here. So you started at what, grade one, and went to grade 12.
Yep.
A PLC.
Yep.
Did you kind of move from one building to another?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Back then, Burwood was, there was us and there was Mount Scopus.
Oh.
And there weren't a lot of other schools. And I had a friend called Robin and she lived in Mount Waverley.
Right.
And it was just all orchards.
That's right, yeah.
It was so different.
Yeah, yeah. Did you wear a boater?
What's a boater?
A little straw hat.
Don't think we did have a hat actually.
Yeah,
I think
straw, wasn't it?
It was one of the things I used to get into trouble for.
What?
Not having my hat.
But weren't you at the age when they'd actually measure your uniform from your knee to the?
No, I think that was a bit later.
A bit later, was it?
Yeah, I think because I left school. I started university in 1970.
70.
Yeah, so I went in just as we were waiting for Whitlam.
Right. So were you involved in the anti-Vietnam struggles in high school?
Not in high school.
No.
No.
Right.
No.
Okay.
Some of the girls were, but I only know that in retrospect.
What do you mean?
Oh, some that I've spoken to, and it turns out that they were...
They would sneak out.
...doing things back then, but I didn't.
No.
I wasn't, but I hit university and very quickly radicalised.
Oh, you can't use that word anymore. You realise that radicalising the young is an offence punishable by imprisonment these days.
Yeah.
Thank God you're on the gardening show. They can't accuse you of radicalising. Well, maybe. You're not guerrilla gardeners, are you?
I approve of them.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
I've got a friend who's a guerrilla gardener and he goes planting stuff where it shouldn't be planted. Nobody notices.
Excellent. Depend, of course, what he plants. We don't want him to plant weeds.
No, he doesn't plant weeds. He plants trees. You know,
excellent.
He thinks he's Johnny, what is it, Johnny Appleseed. He thinks he's that, but obviously. And the trouble is he's got to, you know, regional Victoria is so dry these days, you can see with the fires, that he's got to go out there and not only plant it, he's got to go and sneak in and...
Maintain them
and water.
Absolutely.
It's a hard job being a guerrilla gardener.
That first year you have to get the water in, yes. Mm. I've planted a lot of trees on my place.
Right. So what university?
Melbourne.
Of course.
Was
PLC
close.
Graduate.
Well, Melbourne University back in those days was very middle class. And I had a boyfriend who's just arrived in Australia, actually, whose name was Con. And he and his friend Harry were both Greek boys on full scholarships.
Ships, yeah.
And they were a bit isolated.
Yeah. But you'd have to have a scholarship to go to university in those days.
Well, yes.
Yeah, because you didn't get three education until a few years later. Because in 1970, you would have got a Commonwealth scholarship to pay. Ah, you put your hand up. Yeah, and so what did you do in terms of study, not in terms of your extracurricular activities?
Well, I did more extracurricular. That's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah.
I did more of that, but I did a double history major.
Double history major.
Which was fantastic, because if you don't know your history, and very important if you want to be a part of the left, you've got to understand the history of, and I did Australian history, which was a fabulous subject. We did not mention First Nations people once.
No. That's very good. You did very well. So you did Australian history.
I did Australian history.
Mr. MacArthur and all the Marinos and all that stuff.
Yeah, it was interesting though. Some of it was very good. And what else did I do? British history, Australian history, American history.
What did you have to do?
I did history of revolutions. I loved that.
Did you? History of revolutions. What did you hope to achieve, apart from wasting your time at university?
I was learning.
You were learning. Well, that's the difference, isn't it?
It was very interesting.
Yeah, because I assume you were part of that generation, like I was, where you just have an end-of-year examination. Is that correct?
Yep.
There was no this crappy continuous assessment, because that's, in my opinion, is what destroyed university life, was continuous assessment. Because if you were gifted, you could cram at the end, you could go whatever lecture you wanted to, and if you passed your exam, you passed your exam. But these days, the poor bastards, they've got
have to do it all the time.
So all the time. It keeps them busy, keeps them out of activity.
Well, I think the worst thing about university nowadays is that you don't actually, they've got rid of you meeting people, so it's much harder to become involved in things.
Exactly. Continuous assessment.
And doing heaps of it online.
Yeah, that's right. Get a headache. Now, any lecturers you remember, any flamboyant types in the history department?
No. No.
I love that.
I finished university and promptly left Melbourne.
Excuse me, so when did you finish, 73, 74?
No, I did a dip ed, so I 74, end of 74.
So you did a dip ed, what?
At Melbourne.
At Melbourne, right. You could do in those days. You did your history, then you dip ed.
Did a dip ed, and I started work after that. I was really lucky, and I got to go to Moreland High School,
right,
which was absolutely fabulous.
Why?
It was a very avant-garde state high school.
Right.
And it did really interesting things. It had fabulous people there, like Jean Bedford, who was a really good writer. And it initiated student papers, all sorts of exciting things. However, I was the youngest member of staff, so when they lost a member of staff, it was me. And I was sent to Brunswick High School, who had the most horrendous DLP headmaster who didn't appreciate my worth.
You see Joe over there smiling. I think he went to Brunswick High School. I think he knows what you're talking about. Did you?
I went to Newlands High, but not very far from Brunswick.
You see, he's been destroyed. He's been destroyed with his experience.
Yes.
So,
and then I decided that I wanted to do. It was International Women's Year. You see.
All right.
So I quit so that I could work full-time on International Women's Year. It was a wonderful year.
I'm doing a lecture next week on the New South Wales BLF, and I found out an interesting fact, which I didn't know, that the only reason Sydney University introduced women's studies in 1973 is because they put a green ban on the university.
But a lot of women I knew were in the union.
Yeah.
Pat Fisk, I remember she used to go up on those cranes.
Yep.
Which I thought was extraordinary.
Yeah.
That was good times. We started the first women's press in the Southern Hemisphere
days. Excuse me. The first women's press in the Southern Hemisphere. Tell us about it.
Well, it wasn't a publishing house.
Right.
It was a printing press.
Right.
And we started a printing press in Clerkenwell.
Right.
I wasn't part of the very initial.
Right.
But Barbie, Annie, and Lou, they started it. Then I came in, and it was a great achievement. Of course, we couldn't join the union because women didn't print.
That's right.
And when I went to Britain, the same thing happened to me there. I got a printing job there, and women, I couldn't join the union because I had to join the other
union.
Union, where the typesetters were.
The typesetters
back
union.
Back to typing again.
Let's get back to this press. Where was it? Where was it located?
Chippendale.
Chippendale in New Zealand. What happened? How did you get to Chippendale from Melbourne?
I caught a train.
You caught a train. Very good. Very smart. But why go to Chippendale?
I went to Canberra for, there was two really big conferences for the International Women's Year. Yeah. One was in Melbourne. It was the Women and Madness Conference, which was based around a book by Phyllis Chesler and posited that women going mad and then being given drugs and then being sent back to their homes, which was the situation that often sent them mad, might not be a very forward way of dealing with the problem. And the other one was a Women and Anarchism conference in Canberra. And when I was there, I met a whole lot of women from Sydney. And I thought, this is good.
Right.
Oh, I'm going to go to Sydney. So I just moved up to Sydney.
So this was 74, 75?
Or 75, end of 75.
So how did you make a living?
I went up to Sydney and got a job.
Doing what?
Well, I can't remember my first job. I picked up jobs around the left.
Picked up jobs. Well, you could in those days.
And I picked up jobs around the left. I mean, that's how. Yeah. Oh, I know. I worked at the Workers' Health Centre in Lidcombe.
Yep.
I worked there.
What did you do there?
I was doing research. Mm-hmm. That was the first radical health centre for workers. And we did work on asbestosis, brucellosis. Brucellosis particularly affects meat workers. Yep. I had quite a lot to do with the meat workers.
Right.
And there was a couple of doctors, you know, people came in to see us, and we also did the backup research.
Right.
And then I moved from there to Every Woman Press.
Mm-hmm. That's the press you're speaking about.
Which is the press.
Yep. How hard was it learning?
I was young enough to think I could do anything.
Did you?
And I learnt. I'm not good with machinery. And it was really funny. Quite a bit later, I got another job. And one of the reasons I got it was because I'd done blue-collar work.
Right.
Which I always thought was so ironic because I couldn't drive a car, but I could drive a printing press.
So your history degree was basically a waste of time?
No. Learning history is never a waste of time.
Why is that?
Because it tells you how the world has worked.
Yeah, but in Australia, history begins when you wake up in the morning.
History begins with Invasion Day.
Really? I thought it begins when you wake up in the morning. That's why we've got all this amnesia about what happened in the past.
Could be. It depends how much you drank the night before.
Exactly. Well, no. It's an Australian byword. It begins this morning when I woke up. Everything that's happened is irrelevant.
Well, it is one of our problems. That's why we voted no to the referendum, because we don't understand.
Well, people voted no for a variety of reasons. Yeah, and you're right there.
And an awful lot of them voted no.
Exactly, 60%. Now, here you are in Chippendale, printing.
Yep.
And what happens next?
Well, I got involved with the women's movement. We did all sorts of, you know,
like what?
Feminist things.
Like
we,
what?
Well, we ran the women's press. There was all sorts of. I remember that was when I first did some radio back then.
Where? In Sydney?
Sydney. I think it was NISWIT, which is what University of Technology was then, New South Wales Institute of Technology. I remember doing a couple. And I remember doing one May Day March. It was back, remember when we used to have May Day March?
Yes, a real May Day March.
Real May Day. And I remember doing a May Day March, and we took a ream of paper and gave out blank pieces of paper.
Right.
Which I thought was quite a good move.
Well, you could do that in those days,
So, and I met quite a lot of people from the Communist Party back then, and I met lots of feminist writers.
Right.
And I went surfing.
You went surfing?
Yeah, which I'd done down here.
What, you went surfing? On a board?
They have waves.
On a board?
Well,
You went surfing on a board?
I did a little bit of that, but then I gave up the board and took up body surfing quite seriously for a while there.
Why?
Because it was lovely and cool on a hot day.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. So why did you desert the country?
I didn't really.
Well, what do you mean? I mean, you left.
I went over on holidays. I just forgot to come back.
You went over on a holiday. What year was that? 75?
81.
81? Yeah. So you were involved in the Women's Liberation Movement for 5 to 6 years down in Sydney.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
One doesn't leave the Women's Liberation Movement.
No. So you went...
One is an unreconstructed 70s feminist.
Right. Well, we could go down that path and have many arguments.
But the big problem with 81 in Britain, which is where I landed up...
What do you mean you landed up? Where'd you go before?
No, I went to London.
You went straight to London?
No, I went with a friend from Canberra and we travelled around. I remember going to Ireland with her and we did various things. But then she came back, I stayed. And, of course, it was Thatcherism.
That's right.
And I just stayed there watching Thatcher undermine London and turning it into a miserable, dark, dirty city, which it certainly isn't anymore.
Isn't it?
No, it's a fabulous city.
Really?
Love London.
I haven't been there since 2012, so it's improved, has it?
I think it was pretty good in 2012.
Do you? All right. So how long did you last in the good old Mother England?
I think I came back... 99. I might be wrong. It might have been 98, but it was quite a long time.
You spent 18 years in London.
Mm-hmm.
Doing what?
I started off printing.
Right.
Then I...
Oh, that's because you couldn't join the union because you were a woman. Yep,
yeah.
Yep.
And then I became very involved in the co-op movement then.
Right. Tell us about the co-op movement.
So the co-op movement was big both in housing and in work. And I was living in Hackney, which is an inner East End part of London, and there was quite an active co-op movement there. The council backed us as well, gave us offices so we could organise. And there was a lot of businesses, some of them a print business like ours, and there was also radical things like Chile Solidarity was one of the co-ops there. But then there was a cleaning co-op. There were just businesses that ran themselves as co-ops.
Cooperatives. And you were involved in the cooperative movement.
Movement,
then.
Yep. Yeah. HCD, Hackney Co-op Development.
Yeah. I don't think people...
I haven't thought about this for I don't know how many years.
Well, that's the whole point of having 56 minutes to chat so we can actually extract everything out of your brain. So Hackney Cooperative Development.
Development.
I don't think
HCD.
People. I don't think people in Australia who live in this country understand how powerful councils are because there's no states, are there, government? It's just the federal government and councils.
Yes. Mm. And some of those councils are quite big in the country.
Yeah.
But yes, they are. They're very important.
Right.
But then remember, they did say about the fires at the moment.
Mm hmm.
They have burnt out. An area has been burnt out that is larger than Britain and Ireland combined.
That's right. Yeah.
So one of the things about our need for state governments is just sheer size. We don't have the numbers, but we have the size.
I'm not debating that. I'm not interested. I'm interested in what your experience is in England. I mean, you can debate all you like whether we need state governments or not.
Well, it was very interesting because I'd lost all my all those protections that you have around you. I didn't have my family, I didn't have my brother, I didn't have old friends.
So
I had to forge a whole new life.
And how hard was that?
Well, London's not an easy city.
Mm.
So it was quite hard. It was quite hard. And I was quite poor for a long time.
So if you were born in 52 and you came back in 99, that means you're, you know, almost 50 when you came back.
Yeah, I was.
So you spent the best years of your life, you wasted in London.
Yeah.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was good. And I spent my last 10 years at the House of Commons.
What, cleaning?
No.
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 An elected member?
No.
No, no.
No. I worked for, and when I was in a position where I was working specifically for a particular member, she was a member for Birmingham Ladywood.
Right.
She was probably the best known woman MP after Thatcher.
Right.
And she was as far to the left as Thatcher was to the right.
Mm. Why did she employ an Australian?
Because I had a history degree.
It came in useful. It came in useful.
Not actually true. But I was. She was Shadow Minister for Employment, and I was working at the time with a university looking, and I was working in the trade union part of the university,
right.
looking at employment issues, particularly issues around unemployment.
Right, because you were associated with the trade union movement, that's the main reason you think she employed you?
No, it was because she was employment and she was very interested in programs for unemployed people, and I was working in that area. So that I had a skill that she wanted to.
That she wanted.
And we got on well.
Yeah, but how do you get a job like that?
A friend rang me up and said she was looking for someone.
All right.
And gave me her number, so I rang her, and we tried to find a time to meet. Yeah. I was at North London Poly, which is now North London University.
Right.
And I'm sitting at the Poly, and she was wherever she was, and we couldn't find a time. She said, "What are you doing now?" And I said, "Nothing." She said, "Well, let's go and have dinner."
I like that.
That was how I got interviewed.
Yeah, look, it's halfway through Radical Australia. We're chatting, not interviewing. I'd like to make that point clear. I never interview people. We chat with people. We're chatting with Virginia Haywood, who has been with The Gardening Show since the year 2000, but wasted most of her life in London, the best years of her life. Now, look, I don't know if I should ask you this, but I will. Did romance come into your life in London, or?
Yes, I had my daughter Sylvie, who will be listening to us at the moment. Sylvie Claire Haywood.
Yeah, I understand she's a very, very intelligent human being because she listens to Radical Australia. Is that correct?
That is true. When I told her I was doing this, she said, "Oh, Mum, I love that show."
Well, there you go. There you go. Now your mum's on it. I bet you she's learnt things about you she didn't know.
I don't think so yet.
You don't think so yet?
You never know. But anyway, during that 10 years at the House of Commons, I had Sylvie.
Right, right.
And that was because I had a relationship. Right. But unfortunately, her father died when she was quite young.
Right. That's exceptionally difficult, isn't it?
Hard for her and, yes, particularly I think it's hard to lose a parent and never really get to know that person.
Right. How old was she when her father died?
Nine. But we were separated.
Right.
But he had moved to Australia as well, so he was here. He was in Sydney, but he was here.
Right.
But he got cancer in his brain, so that was rather quick.
It is quick, yeah. It's quite very hard. It's very hard. My step-granddaughter, her father died when she was four. It does have an impact. It has a long impact. Yeah, she's almost 20 now, and you can see that, so it's difficult. So what was it like for young Sylvie growing up in London?
I think it was good, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kids played on the street. We lived in a good street. She went to state school, of course, which we don't call them state schools there, but that's where she went, and... Mm-hmm. She was a bit resistant because there were so many more boys in the class than girls, which she thought was pretty awful. But I think she enjoyed it. She had good friends. She got to know the House of Commons quite well.
All right. Could you tell us a typical day? So staff assistant? What were you described as?
I started off as her researcher. I ended up as her... Political advisor, I suppose.
Political advisor?
I was on the cabinet corridor for a while.
Cabinet corridor. What's the cabinet corridor?
That's the corridor where all the cabinet ministers have their political staff.
So what, you stay on the corridor and whisper through the door?
It was fun. It was very interesting, the House of Commons. And I left before they went... into Iraq, which would have been shocking. I would have hated that.
Right. So let's get back. You were there during the Thatcher years.
Yep.
And were you working in the House of Commons during the Thatcher years or later on?
I started off in the print shop.
Yep.
And then I went to this trade union research section at the University of North London.
Right.
And this is the ironic bit. They took me because I had a degree, which they're particularly fond of.
Right.
At universities. But I had been working in on a machine.
Right.
And so they were that, and they were. This was, it must have been 85,
right,
when Ken Livingston was the mayor of London, and there was, so you had this incredibly conservative government and you had this very radical council in London,
yeah,
the two always being in conflict. And because of that, the universities were all trying to employ more women. But this was a trade union job to work with a lot of blue-collar workers.
Right.
So I came along with a degree and the blue-collar experience, so I was perfect, and they didn't actually find out that I knew about nothing but cameras and printing presses.
Well, that doesn't matter, does it?
No, it didn't.
You had the background.
Yep.
Yeah, you knew what they were talking about.
I did know. Wasn't terribly sure what a labour market was back then.
Oh, right. Well, yes. Are you sure now?
I am absolutely sure now.
Now, did your shadow minister ever become a minister?
She was in the cabinet. She was the Secretary of State for International Development.
Right, and you were her political advisor. What did that entail?
It entailed, well, when I was her researcher, when I was a political, it was the same. I did what she needed. If she was in a panic about something, if she was going somewhere, she'd ring up and say, I'm going to Rwanda tomorrow. Can you come?
Right. Say,
Claire, I have a two-year-old. No, I can't.
Right, right. But did you go anywhere with her? Outside of England?
No. Decided I wasn't going to. Sylvie was too little. I was on my own.
Right.
I mean, I didn't think it was right for her, which was a great pity. I would have loved to have gone to Rwanda. She used to go to Rwanda quite a lot.
A lot, yeah.
But since I've come back here, you know, she was still a cabinet minister and she'd ring up and we'd be talking and she'd say, oh, yes, well, I'm going to Angola.
Yes.
I said, oh, do you want to do a trip in Namibia then? I'll come over and I'll meet you. Or I'm going to Indonesia and say, I'll come up to Bali.
Did it happen? So, Did you ever meet? Where'd you meet?
One time in Namibia. She was doing a conference in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
She was chairing a session at the conference and the only members of the session she was doing, they were all prime ministers.
Right.
And she got me into this conference, but then I couldn't leave till it finished and we left.
Right,
because I didn't have the security clearance.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But and I don't know what she was doing in Indonesia now. But we met in Bali that time.
Do you think it makes any difference who's in government?
I mean, it makes a huge difference.
How?
Well, if you can't see the difference between John Howard.
I'm asking you your experience. I'm asking questions. Doesn't mean I don't know. All right, but.
Well, if you.
You were there for 10 years, right?
I think about some of the worst things that Thatcher did, which were truly dreadful. And we came in, and what she never did was consider the ordinary working person. When we came in, we did things like increase the pension, like increase the minimum wage. These really, not glorious, but terribly basic, important things that just have to be done if you want to improve the lot of the general person out there wandering the streets of London.
So you think parliamentary politics is worthwhile?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think one of the tragedies of America is that their leader is not out of the parliamentary system. And you couldn't get a Trump here or in Britain because their parties would get rid of them.
That's right. Yeah,
we don't have to look very far to see how bad things can be if you get dictatorial leadership.
Yeah. So why did you come back in 99?
Because my dad was unwell.
Right.
My dad was a very special person. I loved him very dearly, and he supposedly wasn't going to live very long.
I like that. Supposedly.
Well, I think
you don't think he gilded the lily, do you?
No, I think because I brought Sylvie with me,
right.
I think that just gave him a real reason. She was six when we came.
Right.
Well, she wasn't. Oh, yes, she was six. She came 2 weeks before her seventh birthday and we didn't know any children for her to have a birthday party with.
Right.
Which is a bit sad.
It is sad.
But she survived and she adored her grandfather.
Right.
And he was very good for her.
So what, you lived with him for a while?
Yes, he lived with us, yeah.
For how long?
5 years.
5 years.
I was going to go back. And, of course, by the time he died, Sylvie was so settled here, I couldn't rip her out and take her back to London.
That's a very good thing you did, not ripping her out. No, I'm being serious. You actually thought about her and her future.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of parents, it's about their future.
Absolutely. I think it's a real mistake. And one of the things I think is really important when, like, my relationship with Ian, her father, wasn't totally excellent.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was pretty ordinary toward the end, and I never involved Sylvie. I never talked to her about it. I do think the way people download their anger and grief onto their children is really a mistake.
Use them as pawns in this battle, you know. It's not only a mistake, but it also causes damage, long-term damage.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you come back, so you've got this wonderful curriculum vitae. You've been in the corridor, the cabinet corridor. You've worked in the House of Commons for 10 years. You've been a political advisor to a minister. So what do you do?
Had my going away party at Downing Street.
You had your going... Oh, luckily it wasn't a COVID-19 party.
Absolutely.
And so what did you do? Did anybody remember you when you came back?
No, didn't know anybody. I got headhunted, actually, because it was when the BRACS government just came in.
All right, yeah. Yeah, and they were a bit unsure. They didn't expect to...
No,
a government.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so my experience, they thought, might be useful. But I was walking Sylvie to school one day and she said, "Are you going to get a job, Mum?" And I said, "Yes, darling, I'll do that soon." She said, "Please don't work at the House of Commons again." I said, "Sweetheart, it's 12,000 miles away." And then the little rat bag, she said, "You know what I mean, Mum."
Right.
And I thought, oh, dear.
Because you're basically at the beck and call, aren't you?
You certainly don't say, "I've got to go home and cook dinner."
Yeah, yeah. You don't have fixed hours. And
No. It's long. And also, when I really thought about it, I mean, when I left London, you know, I had the home phone numbers, or at least the digital numbers of, you know, leading the top trade unionists in the country and blah and blah. I knew I had phone number of Tony Blair's right-hand person, and I didn't have any of that sort of access, so that I didn't know that I'd actually be as effective either. Mm.
So you turned down the job. So what did you do instead?
Well, before Dad died, I was dying of boredom.
Really?
Oh, I was dying of boredom.
Not sitting at home.
Oh.
Watching Days of Our Lives.
I didn't sink as low as Days of Our Lives, although I did watch that at one stage when I was doing my dip ed.
Right. Confessions.
Yeah, there was a bunch of us. We were living in Carlton and we used to come home and watch Days of Our Lives. Yep.
Yeah. Yes, but as you do when you're a young woman. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I went off to Burnley. I enrolled in a...
Not the Horticultural College. I cannot believe it. From the... corridor, the cabinet corridor to Burnley Horticultural College. What possessed you?
I loved it.
What do you mean? But why did you go there? I mean, why did you...
Because I was bored.
Yeah, but why did you think, "I'm going to change my career"?
By not trying to get a job with that first Labor government here.
Right.
That was my step away from politics. I switched politics for plants.
And which is more interesting?
Then politics, now plants.
Plants. Depends what you're doing.
Yeah.
So how long did it take you? How long did you stay at Burnley Agricultural College?
Well, I started doing a postgrad diploma and it was very sort of management. So I thought, oh, no, I don't want to do this. So I went and re-enrolled in a Cert 4.
Cert 4, what's that? Certificate 4 of what?
Of horticulture.
Right.
And that was fabulous. I did soils.
Ugh.
I did plant ID.
Did you wear gloves?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Soil, that's disgusting.
I washed my hair so that I can clean my fingernails.
That's disgusting. That really is. You play with the soil.
All the time. Love it. Very close to the worms.
God, I can't believe this. Her feet are clean. She hasn't got any shoes on. They look good. There's no... dirt. You want to look at my heels?
I have. Well, one of the things I do, which I did today, I thought, right, they want me to come in to this mad radio show. Oh, better get in the shower. first thing you do when you when I
well, I appreciate that. Thank you, Virginia.
And wash my feet, wash my hands.
That was very kind of you.
Covered in dirt.
That's kind.
Because I've got a 6-acre garden, so I tend to get dirty.
Excuse me, you've got a 6-acre garden. My parents had a 5-acre farm. I know what the size of a 6-acre garden is. And what's in this 6-acre garden?
Lots of plants.
Really? You're kidding? They've got plants. You haven't got concrete?
Nope.
Painted green? No?
Nope.
No? Mate, nope. What type of plants?
Oh, I've got all sorts of things. I've got food plants. Mm-hmm. I've got lots of salvias because they bring the birds and the insects. I've got trees.
So did you plant all this? Or did So
the vast majority of it I planted.
So when you bought this 6 acres, it was what, old cow paddocks or?
It's part of it was a vineyard.
Right.
And the rest had been largely neglected, the other paddocks. And the paddock that the house was in was just grass.
Right.
And they had one garden bed which was full of this plant called diosma, which is one of the only plants in the world that I absolutely loathe.
Why?
Oh, it's hideous.
Why is it hideous?
It's boring.
It's boring. Well, I'm boring.
It smells. And the first weekend I was there, I just pulled all the diosma out.
Really?
Found a few other things under it. There were very few plants there.
But how did you find this 6-acre block?
This friend of mine, Fiona, who's arriving from England next week, she was living in Seville and she rang me up. Where are you, Virginia? Oh, I'm in Healesville getting a coffee. Make a takeaway. Come over here now.
Right.
Oh, no, I don't want to. Go on, come.
Right.
She was living in Seville and I'd sort of been mumbling about maybe moving to the country.
Why don't you call it Seville?
Because it's not Seville.
Well, it's spelled differently, is it?
It was named after a little girl called Seville.
Right.
The name of the town was, I can't remember what, and then the post office said another place has got this same name. We're not going to have two places. This is back in the 18s.
Yep.
And the little girl who lived on my street, in fact, whose name was Seville, she died at the age of 9.
Right.
So they decided to name the town after her. So it's Seville.
Not Seville. Well, I've learned something.
And there are oranges growing there, but I don't know that they're Seville oranges either.
Do you remember the first day you walked into 3CR?
Yes. I was on the outside line. We always, when I first came, we used to run the outside line.
Could you explain what that is?
The outside, because 3CR Gardening Show is a talkback, we have people who ring and don't want to go on air. They feel too awkward.
Mm.
So they will, the people in the second studio who take all the calls in, either direct it into the studio to be live or out to the outside line.
Right.
And I was on the outside line and it was tough because at least in the studio there's three of you so you can toss ideas around about what the problem the caller is talking about, whereas if you're on the outside line, and I'd done my Cert 4 and I'd started gardening, so I knew a bit, but I learnt a lot being quick, on the outside line. And then one day there was a crisis, so I came into Studio 2 to do the phones and all that, the computer and everything. I had to learn all that very quickly. And then some years later there was another crisis and I ended up in here, in the studio.
In the studio?
In the studio. On this side.
Right.
I would just come in occasionally and be one of the guests.
Right.
And then Pam retired after many, many years. Mm. She was a stalwart of the show.
Right.
And left it to Stephen Ryan and I. But Stephen didn't want to learn how to do the things on that side.
Oh, I've got a great deal of respect for Stephen.
Yes.
Because I've never learned.
It's hard.
It's not only hard, it's boring. It splits. Look, I'm talking to you, right? I need to listen to you. I need to formulate questions. I don't want to be bothered by pushing buttons.
Plus, I've got the screen on because we've got calls coming in. We've got SMSs coming in.
Yes,
you've got all that. Because we're getting so many listeners from out of state now and out of country.
Excuse me. Listeners from out of state and out of country. What's going on here?
Yeah, we do. We have a lot of listeners from out of state and out of country.
Because there really aren't many gardening shows on other commercial radio stations or the Australian Broadcasting Corporation.
And they're not good. They tend to be very... There's a very good one in Perth.
Right.
Very good one in Perth.
Right.
But no, there's not. The one that's on 774 is short and interrupted, and the person who conducts it knows nothing about gardening, so has very little empathy.
Right.
And it's too short. Stephen's on that, and he's very good, but there's not enough time. And there was one on 3AW, and that was shocking. I don't know if it's still there. Triple R had one for a while, but they don't do it anymore.
No.
No, and we're so long. We're that hour and three quarters, so we really can get into a bit of depth.
Right. So what are the main things that people ask you?
Poor, very varied, and it will very much change with the time of year, of course.
Right, yes.
Like in spring, people will want to know about what vegetables to plant. People want to know about pruning their hydrangeas. Mm. People want to know what plants they should plant because they would like birds in their garden. Or a whole range. People want to change their garden from being mainly overseas plants to... Australian plants.
Right. So how long have you had your garden at Seville?
20 years now.
20 years. Now, have you noticed changes?
Yes, the rain's disappeared.
Yeah. The rain has disappeared.
Yeah.
I remember the rain because I have a small farm which I work on.
Where's yours?
It's north central Victoria, right up there.
Oh, well, you'll be dry.
Dry, 30 mils in 18 months, 30 millimetres.
Well, I have just had the driest winter I can remember.
Mm.
It was actually the rain was when I knew I'd gone back to being Australian. I was no longer a Londoner.
Right.
When I looked at the rain and said, oh, it's raining. And I was excited and said, God, it's raining again.
Yeah. No, it's exceptionally dry. That's why we've got all these fires. But you have noticed changes.
Definitely. This year I went into the end of winter saying we're in a drought. And I'm only on tank water. Even though I'm close to town, it is ridiculous how close to town you can be and not have water.
That's
Or sewerage.
Yep.
And I've got all these tanks and they're not full at the end of winter.
Yep.
You know, winter, our childhood was about wet winters.
Mm. And the vegetables you plant, have you noticed changes in terms of timing when you plant, when you harvest?
A bit. I mean, I have a sweet potato in. I wouldn't have even tried that a while ago when I first moved here.
So there are advantages to climate change.
One of the other things is I think there's more trouble with the grapes now.
Yeah, there is.
Because we're getting a lot of wet in the beginning of summer, which used to come in winter when that was good. It got down into the soil. Soil was nice and wet to get through, but dry for the... You know, the grapes are all getting fungal problems.
Well, people are growing bananas in Melbourne.
Yeah.
They're growing sugar cane in Melbourne, believe it or not.
That's ridiculous, but yes.
Yeah, you know, I've got patients who've got gardens and that's what they're growing. They're growing plants, vegetables that you wouldn't think of planting. Even coffee trees I've seen planted.
Yes. And you know, it used to be difficult to take an eggplant through. You know, I used to ring up friends in England saying, oh, I'm growing aubergine.
Aubergine, yeah. And they don't use the word eggplant, do they?
No, they don't.
They're ignorant.
That's American.
Yeah, yeah. And why did you ring them up?
Because I talk about gardening.
Gardening, right.
I ring them up because they're my friends.
Right. Have you written anything?
No.
What do you mean?
Oh, God, no. It was the bit I loathed at university was writing essays.
Yeah, but if I got my maths right, you'd be 72, 73.
That's right.
Average life expectancy of a woman would be about 87. If you've got another 14 years, and it'll all disappear when you die. You must have extraordinary amount of knowledge regarding plants which need to be shared.
I also have some ridiculous House of Commons stories that...
Need to be shared.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but not when they could still be interesting to the press.
You could
have to wait a bit longer.
You could tell us one. No, she's sworn to secrecy.
But, you know,
sworn to secrecy.
I remember ringing up a friend one time. I was at Claire's house and we had the the press outside, and I rang her up and said, look, I'm going to unlock the back gate. Could you bring us some food? We can't get
out because of the press, things like that. Well, I wrote something about 7 or 8 years ago, which I haven't actually published for that reason. But the thing, what I'm saying to you is now's the time to write it.
Yes.
You don't have to publish it.
No. And I really regret that I didn't do some more interviews with Dad.
Right, yeah.
I mean, he had fabulous stories. I've got lovely photos of him with all sorts of extraordinary people.
Well, he would. Did he do anything at 3CR?
No. He was just the ABC.
Right.
He did both the television,
right,
that one of those talking football shows.
Yeah.
And then after he stopped doing the footy, he used to come over and do Wimbledon, which was fabulous. I loved that.
He used to come and do Wimbledon to see his daughter and then his granddaughter when she was born.
Absolutely adored his granddaughter.
What a life, you know. It's a good life. So what are you doing to kill time these days, apart from working on a six-acre garden and coordinating the gardening show?
I'm also a guide at the Botanic Gardens.
You're a guide.
Mm-hmm.
How much time does that involve?
Not a lot. Three, four times a month.
Mm.
So it's not too demanding and it's good fun.
And what type of people come?
Oh, so varied. Sometimes it's locals, often it's internationals.
Mm. Mm.
Very, very varied groups of people. And it can be actually about juggling that, you know, making sure that you satisfy a group. You've got some who know nothing.
Mm.
And then you've got others that are actually quite knowledgeable, and it can be quite tricky to make sure they're all enjoying the walk.
Have all the flying foxes left?
Yes. Yeah. They have actually come back just recently.
It's too dry down at Fairfield, maybe?
I don't know why they've come back, but they're not welcome because they do damage the trees.
They do.
And it's our fault, of course, because we've knocked down so much of the bush, which was their habitat.
Yeah, if you go down to Fairfield, the boathouse, you can...
Absolutely.
There's thousands of them. Mm. Yeah. So what if I was mad enough to go to the Botanic Gardens and get my hands dirty, not that I'd dig up any plants.
I'd hope not.
What would you recommend people look at?
Well, I would say that every day at 10:30 there is a free walk.
Mm-hmm.
And those guided walks I think are a really good way because you just get it. When you're going by yourself, you tend to just walk past things and miss. And the other thing too about us guides is we know the history. And that is also at times quite useful.
Mm. Did you know the history of the gardens post-World War II?
That's a trick question, I think.
No. It's an interesting question because they returned servicemen and women were billeted in tents in the gardens and the MCG. Because there was no accommodation for them.
Of course.
Yeah. Did I got pictures of that? Because that'd be interesting.
No, I haven't seen any. I imagine there's some tucked away somewhere.
Right. Now, in the last 90 seconds, in case there's somebody listening to this program, apart from Sylvie.
And John from Minnesota.
Yeah, we know John. He rings Talkback with Attitude. Yeah, we know John. We've heard about him. Have you got any... You've got a long life experience. Have you got any advice for young people embarking on a journey of radical activity?
I think have a go. I think the big mistake we make is think, oh, no, it's a bit too risky. Oh, I don't really think, oh, it'd be more sensible to do that. Mm. Don't be sensible when you're young.
Don't be sensible.
Not too sensible. I'd think, you know, swim between the flags.
Right.
But take the occasional risk.
Right. Well, Virginia Haywood, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Hopefully your daughter has listened, and if she hasn't, the program will be podcast. Joe there will be taking a photograph of you somewhere here, maybe in the courtyard, next to a plant. What do you reckon, Joe, next to a plant? Yeah, he's not.
And I've got a photo of me in 1975 that keeps appearing on the front of the museum.
Does it?
Top of Collins Street. So I'll give you that and you can put that on the podcast.
Well, don't give it to me. I wouldn't know what to do with it. But let Joe know how to access the photo and we'll put both up. It will be before and after. How does that sound?
That sounds like an excellent idea.
All right. Thank you very much, William. Thank you very much, Joe, for doing all the work and making us look good. Without you, there'd be no broadcast. And thank you, listeners, for listening to Radical Australia. As I said, It's a pleasure talking to you, Virginia, and hopefully you'll have many more years here on the Gardening Show, and you'll continue to look after your plants, and hopefully the climate emergency doesn't do too much damage. The only good thing about people our age is we don't have to worry about it because we'll die soon.
You've been listening to Radical Australia, folks. Stay tuned now for Brainwaves.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.